Good morning, everyone. Let me go ahead and call the Mesa City Council study session of Thursday, September 27th, 2007 to order. The first item will be to review items on the agenda for October 1st. Do you want to take a peek at the packet? Yep. Page 1 is typical introduction stuff. Page 2, liquor license applications. Continuing, page 3, contracts. I had a question on 4A. I think it's tied into 4J, too. There's a bunch of vehicles. We're also doing $7,000 or whatever it is per vehicle to put light bars and sirens and everything. Is there new technology, new light bars, the other ones we don't use? How does that work?
Yeah, correct, Mayor. Exactly what we're doing now is we're taking the equipment off of some of the patrol cars as they're being retired and using it on new existing cars, or new cars that are coming in.
Okay, is that the different light bars? I think I've seen some of them there.
You probably have. They're a very narrow light bar.
Correct.
Yeah, low-profile LED, okay. Very, very high luminosity.
All right. We used to do a lot of those in-house. Have we looked at the difference between doing that in-house and contracting it out? Have we actually done a price comparison on that?
We did, and actually this contract is actually for doing it all exclusively outside.
Right.
So we're partnering with the private sector. Fleet only has one technician left that is actually qualified to do that work. And if you looked at the delivery times and you also looked at the upfit times, it was much better to have that done in the private sector. We can turn a car completely, have it decaled and upfitted within 24 hours. It was taken Fleet about 2 weeks to do it.
Well, what if Fleet geared up in order to do it in 24 hours for 82 of them with enough people? Do they come in big batches? Is that what the issue is?
Exactly. The cars come in large groups. We have those cars directly drop shipped to the contractor. They arrive directly at his site. They never come here. The upfitting process takes place. When we take possession of the cars, they are totally complete. Light bars, decals, everything, they're actually ready to be issued.
Okay. I just like the concept of having city departments compete with the outside sector, and I'm glad that's what you're trying to do.
That's exactly what we're trying to do, Mayor.
Right. Mike?
Just along the same line, are we buying the vehicles black and white, or are they being painted aftermarket?
Right now, we're buying them black and white. There was a proposal to also take a look at what's called wrapping a vehicle. So in other words, buying the vehicle white and then doing a wrap, very similar to what you see in a transit bus. It's a little bit more expensive than painting, but at the far end of the vehicle life when we're surplusing that vehicle, makes some sense because we can return the vehicle quickly to white again. So we're looking at that.
I'm trying to get a vision on what wrapping is.
It's a material that, it's actually the black material that goes on the car and makes the car black and white.
The car is essentially white.
You see it wrapped around cars and they use it now. It's just
wrapping. The graphics wrap.
Graphics around a lot of vehicles now, that's wrapping.
And they're going to last for a period of time that we need them?
They already have. There are some agencies who are using them. Okay. Kind of an interesting sidelight on some of these vehicles. If you look at a patrol car that's been in service for a long time, if you look where the door lock is, you'll see all the scratches around the door lock in the paint. With the wrap material that's on there, you don't see that. That wrap material is fairly thick. So there are some advantages of doing it. It's not as quite as bright in color as the black paint would be, but it does allow us to quickly turn that car back to white, and we get a much better price, obviously, for a white car than we would a black and white car at auction.
Okay. And have you calculated that into whether to do it or not? Is that
we have.
Part of your factors? Sir? Excellent. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Mike?
Yeah, I would worry about the black and whites being out on the street after we get rid of them.
We're not going to surplus them. We're going to return them and actually paint them white again. It's about a $400 option to do that.
Okay. All right.
Thank you.
We're on page 3, page 4, additional contracts. Vice Mayor.
I have a couple of questions. The first one is that we have several items on here that are limit increases. I'm not sure why we got quite so many at one time, but I'm just curious about why we have so many that we need limit increases on. And then I'm going to have a question on 4-H.
Mayor, council member, it's really, there's no one set answer. It's just the way things have timed out and played out.
And is this an abnormal number of contracts that we're needing to increase the dollar limit on, or?
There are some unusual things going on. The addition of opening of the Greenfield water reclamation plant has added some issues on some of the estimates that we made, contracts that were put out before the plant opened, and we've had a couple of those come forward in the last couple months.
Okay. Thank you very much. Go ahead. Sorry.
Do you have an equal number out there that never make it to the dollar maximum that was set?
Yes, we have.
Okay. So looking at a spreadsheet, you're still in balance. That's not an issue. All right.
My question on 4-H has to do, this is the sign sheeting for the transportation department, and Lenny wants to come up and answer this one. I could tell by the look on his face out there. We're having some problems with our street signs right now, that they are turning brown, and I'm assuming this sign sheeting is also for the street signs. Is that what this is?
Mayor, Vice Mayor, Walters, what you see out there in those sign sheets is the street name signs turning, actually, they're going black. It's a new design we came up with. It's a two-tone after 3 years. So
you and the police department have been working
on this? That's right. We're working on it. That's that new final wrap. What it was is a product we tried from another vendor a few years ago. It's we typically use acrylic sheeting over top of a reflective sheeting. And it had a guarantee or warranty on that product, but it failed miserably. We're not the only city that's gone through it. We've had approximately, I think, 3,000 or 4,000 street name signs that have turned from green to black or various shades of colors. The vendors came back and replenished all the supplies and redoing those signs now, so they're in the process of replacing those signs. This sheeting here is just a off-the-shelf, typical sheeting we would use through one of our vendors. It's not the same product, but it's similar type sheeting. It's an acrylic-based material.
And the one that's being replaced, the vendor is replacing the faulty sheeting, was my understanding.
That's correct. They're replacing the sheeting and having them made up for us, too.
And the installation?
We take care of the installation. We have to replace those.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Mayor.
Next, page 4, page 5. Mike.
I have a contract on with Brown Evans on 4K, so I'll be declaring a conflict.
Okay. All right. Excuse me. Anything else on page 5? Page 6. Question on 4-0. I know this is the disposal of biosolids removal. And the thought happened to occur to me that with the Pinal County Water Farm and all that land down there, some of that must be non-agriculture or non-edible food production. Do they have any issues with disposal sites? I know the 91st Avenue site, they keep moving further and further out, and that's the transportation costs are huge. Has that been considered to actually give them an option of some of the farmland or one of the leases we have to move those, or is it too far in the transport?
Mayor and Council, we really haven't considered that at this point in time. This is a new contractor, the existing contractor that's being used for 91st Avenue, and actually our existing contractor and one of the bidders, as you indicated, has been having troubles finding sites, and they just, as you said, they keep going further and further west towards the Colorado River for solids disposal. On this new contract, we're using a different vendor. References on him were immaculate, and actually he did come in at a lower price. We have not discussed disposal sites at this point in time. It is an excellent option if we could do that for cotton and other non-edible crops.
Okay. All right. Just run it by him and see if he needs some help, or we can get a better price. It might save us some money.
Thank you.
All right. That's page 6. Page 7. We're into introduction of zoning cases. Mike, do you have something? All right.
Mayor, if I may.
Yes. All right.
5B is the introduction of the ordinance for the new PC district.
Right.
We also have some changes that are being made to Title IX. We didn't get that on the ordinance or on the agenda. You'll see that on your Monday agenda, also a section for changes to Title IX. Just want to give you a heads up on that. You'll get that ordinance information tomorrow.
Okay.
That will be an interesting process and project with the planned community zoning to give a little bit more flexibility. I appreciate all the work that's taken place on both sides of that. Vice Mayor.
Thank you. When we're talking about Title IX, that isn't women's sports that we're adding to the zoning agenda. If you look at 5D, that is what many of us have come to think of as the former Lowe's site. And so what's happening, I'd like to clarify what's happening on this site. The zoning, the site plan is being removed?
Yes, Mayor, Vice Mayor Walters. The site for some time, it's I recall a 23-acre site. There's 7 acres kind of to the northeast corner right at Kiowa and Country Club that has a PAD overlay zoning on it and a site plan that modifies the overall site plan for the site. So now we really have two kind of competing site plans and that PAD zoning that's not really needed. So this application removes the PAD zoning and basically wipes the slate clean on any site plans and sets it up for future site plan review for development according to the M1 district.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you.
All right. Okay, that's page 7, page 8, resolutions. Tom.
A question on 6A, which is the Falcon Field airport leases and storage agreements. And I already talked to Corinne yesterday about the length of these documents, and I have nobody to blame but my own profession. But on the storage agreement, we seem to be going to these very long-term master leases where people can buy an interest in the condominium slash hangar and for up to 40 years. And then we have a month-to-month storage agreement, which I understand what we've had before. But it seems to me we don't have anything for somebody who wants to come in and say, you know, I'd like to have a hangar for 5 years. The problem with the storage agreements is that they're terminable at the will of either party with a 15 days notice by the tenant and any time by us as long as we give them, it's within the term of the month. So are we thinking about giving people the option? I understand there are people who want to do month-to-month, but are there also, do we have another model for somebody who wants to rent one of our hangars for more than on a more certain basis than month to month?
Mayor Hawker, Councilmember Rawls, at this point in time, that's not an option that we've looked at because historically, like you say, it's just been looked at on a month to month basis. But certainly, if that's something that council would like for us to take a look at, we could certainly do that.
Yeah, my concerns are that we've had this huge waiting list, and hopefully the new construction and the new development is going to eliminate a lot of that, and we're going to get into a position where we're not feeling the same pressure. And I understand why the city wanted to have a lot of flexibility with that huge waiting list there. If we're going to enter into a new era, if I was an airplane owner and I didn't want to buy a $40,000 or a $350,000 to $400,000 hangar for 40 years, but I wanted more certainty than that the city could come in with for no reason at all and kick me out in 30 days notice, I think another option is desirable. Let them, you know, maybe it's a 5-year lease, maybe it's a 1-year lease, but just something with a little bit more economic and business certainty for the owners of airplanes. So I would like to see some direction in that regard.
Sure, take a look at that.
I would concur. Obviously, it'll have a cost inflator so that you can do the pricing.
Right.
So you don't. I think some of the leases that were out there for a long time had some locked-in rates that they negotiated a long time ago, and they had a little shell shock when they were increased. And I think the new program is much more market-driven, so that you make the adjustments as the market changes. So I like the work that's been done, but I think this would be a tweak to it that would probably add some benefit also.
We can certainly take a look at that.
Okay. The other thing that was mentioned in our report is there's 915, I think, current leases out there, and this gives some approval process so we don't have to look at every single one of those. Does that approval process then go back and look at the 915 and take care of those too and take care of all of the legal questions about who had to do the final approval? Or do we have to do those once and then it turns over, or how does that work?
Mayor Hawker, basically if the council were to approve the boilerplate agreements in front of you, then basically you're giving the city manager the authority to sign those agreements himself or designate someone to sign on behalf of the city for those. So would not have to go back to council to take a look at.
Okay, so there's no issue about going back on some of the existing leases out there?
Oh, no. No.
Okay. Vice Mayor? Tom?
You do intend, all the people that have this very, the short one-page month-to-month lease, you do intend to go back and have them sign the new storage agreement?
Mayor Hawker, Councilmember Rawls, that's correct.
Right, so you are going to go back to those 915, but it's going to be with the boilerplate agreement that's before us.
That's correct.
Monday night. Okay. Mm-hmm.
So you are catching them all.
Yeah.
All right. Vice Mayor.
Thank you. I just want to talk about the storage issues and the issues of the use out there, because I have people who will say to me, well, why don't you, if you're paying, if somebody's paying their rent, why can't they just do whatever they want on that property? Can you just take a second and explain that?
Certainly, Mayor Hawker, Vice Mayor Walters. When the airport was deeded back from the federal government after World War II to the city of Mesa, there was a provision in that instrument of transfer that specifically stated that anything on that property needed to be used for airport purposes, i.e. aviation. That has since been followed up by rulings by the Federal Aviation Administration that apply to all public use airports that receive federal funding, that the airport properties must be used for aeronautical purposes only. And the reason behind that is because the federal government does pay substantial amounts of funding. In the case of Falcon Field, it's usually $1 million to $1.5 million a year to keep the airport infrastructure going in terms of the runways and taxiways and so forth. They are disinclined to invest in airports that then turn around and use their airports for non-aeronautical purposes. And so that is why there is that restriction specifically in 5196A, which is a federal document stating that you have to use it for aeronautical purposes.
Thanks for the explanation.
You're welcome.
Okay. Any other questions on that page? Okay, let's go on to page 9. Tom.
On 7C, I don't have a problem with 7A and 7B. I've talked through with everybody. But there is nothing in the council report that really addressed why we're extending the period of time to get people into the criminal arena versus where they are in the civil arena. We're going from a 2-year period to a 3-year period. I'm all in favor of 7A and 7B and the progress we're making there in terms of the increased civil penalties, etc. I just didn't find any rationale in the backup material for why we're, you know, expanding the time period through which somebody can become or pushed into the criminal process versus the civil process.
Mayor, Councilmember Rawls, one of the reasons why we did that in the past, when we had repeat violators and we had the shorter time frame, they would go, before it was a 24-month period. And what happened is they would go that 24-month period, there wouldn't be any action, so the new period would start. And so we would have to go ahead and start the process all over again. So by extending the period to 36 months, we felt that, you know, if the person continued to violate the same type of violation over a 36-month period, we would be able to deal with the situation at that point, rather than just, you know, being a shorter period of time. So it would be an advantage to us to deal with that individual and, you know, and take care of the situation rather than wait, you know, having to start the process all over again.
I understand. Okay. Then this is essentially then a desire to cast a broader net.
Yes.
Okay. I'm just, again, I don't have any problem with 7A and B. I'm really not in favor of us criminalizing a whole bunch more conduct. I think a 24-month period, somebody messes up during that 24-month, so I'll have 7C pulled. And
okay, why don't you just change it to say that somebody's already in the process that's been cited, doesn't get a do-over for another 24 months. They're already in the, have had different, something's already pending against them. So why go to 36 months to catch them just change your language. I don't quite understand what.
The reason why we've done this before is mainly because the fact is that because of the way, and you're right, the language, probably if we looked at the language a little closer, we might be able to change that. But one of the things that we've felt like at this particular time that because of the fact that we've had some of these repeat offenders.
No, I understand your explanation. I just don't. I think there's a whole different way of doing it. There ought to be a different way of doing it. I mean, if somebody's on death row and you have a 5-year period to say we need to get you a conviction or you're going to go free, once they're on death row, they've got a whole case file of things they've done. You don't dismiss it and say, oh, go kill somebody else and we'll bring you back in. So that's why I don't quite get the logic here on what's going on.
Well, what we'll do is let me get back with the city attorney's office and let's see what we can do to look at the verbiage with that and see what we can do with that.
Okay. Vice Mayor.
I like your analogy.
A little stronger.
Just a smidge. Just a smidge, which is why it was so fun.
We are on death row.
I think that I was going to say something along the lines that the mayor said, but I think that the issue that we heard last night where we have foreclosures that are happening and you have an extensive period of time before you actually determine where the ownership lies with these properties, that the clock shouldn't be ticking during that time. I don't know, like a tolling agreement or something, that as you're going through the process that the clock isn't ticking. And I think the attorneys can figure that out. So I think there's a way of doing that.
And I think that's a good issue, but the 2-year, or whether it's a 2-year window or a 3-year window, the clock's not going to start ticking until you know who the owner is and they have their first violation. And then the question is, do you want to give them 36 months or 24 months during which we can turn these violations into criminal? And I think there is a way to capture it without criminalizing more conduct, and that's my preference. So are you thinking you're going to be able to get back by Monday?
Yes, I'll go ahead and talk to the city attorney's office and we'll...
My sense is, though, since this is an ordinance that was previously introduced, if we change it, we'll have to start over with that part of it. But okay. That won't affect 7A and 7B. I checked the agenda myself this morning to make sure I wasn't going to be slowing that part down. So if we have to slow this one down, that's fine.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. I noticed that 7F was a monument sign. If we could please pull that one. All right, that's page 9, page 10. Mike.
Question for the city attorney. I need to know whether you concur that this is remote, too remote to be a conflict. The engineer on this project is Allen Consulting Engineers. Mr. Allen, the principal of that firm, is a customer of my business. His business is not. So therefore, he's a customer, but he's only the engineer on the project. His firm is not a customer, and there's no relationship between Mr. Nuttall, the owner of the project. I consider that too remote. Would you check and see if you concur?
Mayor Hawker, Councilmember Wave, I would concur on that, but I'll get to an answer before Monday, but I think your analysis is correct.
Okay. Is the review of the items for October 1st? Let's go ahead and back to the study session. Item number 2 is hear a presentation and discuss planned community districts, which we saw as item 5B on the agenda.
Mayor, council members, 3 weeks ago we gave you a fairly extensive presentation on what the intent of a planned community district was and some of the associated details, and kind of went almost line by line, so to speak, on some of the issues. I understand you're busy and I don't want to necessarily repeat that. What's happened since then is that we've taken some of the direction that we've taken the direction that you've given us. We've continued to negotiate with what we anticipate to be the first applicant. We've taken that information to the Planning and Zoning Board with the information that I believe was passed out to you in your packets. Planning and Zoning reviewed that last Thursday. They recommended approval of it 7-0 with a very minor change to clarify how to calculate the area of that might be involved and certain processing of the cases. Outside of that, we believe we have an ordinance that both the applicant and staff can recommend approval to. We also have language for making modifications to Title IX so that in addition to presenting you with a developer-driven package of information for a PC district they can, that's related to the zoning code, we can also present to you at the same time engineering-related standards that would relate to the right-of-way, which is what the Title IX area of the city code revolves around. So with that, we believe we have pretty much come to an agreement with most items, and we don't need to negotiate any further. If the council agrees with the language, then we're ready to prepare an ordinance that you would see in your packets tomorrow for introduction on Monday night.
Okay. Questions?
Okay.
It appears as if we're on the right track, so see it on Monday. Number three is hear an update and discuss Building Strong Neighborhoods Initiative.
Good morning, Mayor, members of the council. We're here this morning to give you an update on Mesa's Building Strong Neighborhood Initiative for the 2006 and 2007 year. With me is Susan Ferbota with our Neighborhood Outreach Office, who's going to be doing the presentation.
Good morning. Our Building Strong Neighborhood Initiative, the goal is to preserve and strengthen neighborhoods. We set out to conduct one event per council district within the first 12 months. This was a four-week concentrated effort within designated neighborhoods to provide residents and businesses with education, training, and access to existing city resources within those boundaries, and to encourage collaboration among residents, businesses, city staff, and external agencies. The neighborhood surveys that we conducted were door-to-door, asking neighbors to identify issues within their neighborhood. We took the results of that survey and revealed them to neighborhoods at the initial kickoff meeting, where residents received not only the results of the survey, but also received information on city and external resources in an expo-type setting, where they not only received the information, but they received personal contact with who's the code officer in their neighborhood, who's the crime prevention specialist in their neighborhood, who's the traffic analyst in that neighborhood. So not only just the information on paper, but that one-on-one personal contact. Of course, education and training to match available resources to neighborhood issues, and the neighborhood issues that rose to the top that were revealed in the survey, we formed neighborhood action teams around. Just an overview of the six districts and the Building Strong Neighborhood locations. We kicked off in January 2007 in Council District 4. Council District 4 had the highest amount of tonnage removed, 85 tons of debris. 10 tons came from the special cleanup project at 706 East Maryland. And of course, we couldn't have done it without the 50 plus volunteers who painted over graffiti and assisted in cleaning the lot. Council District 1, we had a 50% response rate on the surveys. One of the things that we learned initially in Council District 4, we took the surveys specifically door to door. And we realized that we needed to not only include the residents that lived within the boundaries, but also any owners of properties that were rentals. So we began in Council District 1 not only doing the door-to-door surveys, but also mailing to all residents that we found through the Maricopa County tax records. So that way we included owners of rental properties as well to get them engaged in their neighborhoods. Traffic was a concern in all six of the areas. In the traffic team in Council District 1 was successful in getting not a through streets on Gary and Hackamore. We tried to identify at least one special project in each of the neighborhoods, and in Council District 1, neighbors participated in painting and donating paint for the painting project along Alma School. And we had probationers and volunteer cleaning properties for handicapped individuals. In Council District 2, we kicked that off in March 8, 2007, with a 42% response rate. 60 tons of debris removed and 35 code cases were opened. Council District 2 saw the highest amount of code violation cases open during the four-week period. After the four-week closed, we still had 10 cases that were opened, and those have since been brought into compliance. Graffiti was a huge problem in the neighborhood in Council District 2, so we did an education campaign and making sure that residents knew that we had a graffiti hotline number that was available 24 hours a day to eliminate graffiti in the neighborhood. At the last council district, you saw three alley abandonment petitions come forward, and those were a result of the work from the alley abandonment team in Council District 2. Council District 5 kicked off in April, and 15 residents were in attendance. However, we did have a torrential downpour that evening. It was successful, however, though, in the four action team meetings that more residents showed up for the action team meetings that had actually participated in the initial meeting. Council District 5 was an HOA. One of the projects they continue to work on is a driveway gating project. They have rental properties to the north of their community and a high amount of foot traffic through their garage areas, so they're trying to eliminate that by gating. Eagle Scout projects we saw in many of the neighborhoods to identify house numbers. Council District 3 kicked off in May 8th of 2007. We had a 40% response rate on the surveys, 49 tons of debris removed. Crime teams and public safety teams we saw in each six of the districts. Concerns in all neighborhoods that we worked in part of the Building Strong neighborhoods. And so we formed the public safety and crime teams in order to get more block watches in neighborhoods, in order to educate more on crime prevention measures. Again, traffic was a concern in all six of the neighborhoods. In this district, they were able to get no truck signs installed on South Westwood. And they also had five special alley cleanups. Council District 6 kicked off in June of 7. 48 residents in attendance, 42% response rate, four action teams were formed, and 61 tons of debris was removed from the Casa Mia neighborhood. June's a tough month to get any beautification projects done, so the neighbors continue to have beautification projects on their list that they'll continue to work on as the weather starts to cool down. The baseline improvements were not a result of the Building Strong neighborhoods. However, they had started earlier, and Lenny Hume from Transportation was instrumental in locating funding in order to move forward with this project. Sidewalks were installed on the north side of Baseline between 80th Street and 82nd Place, as well as gravel brought in and landscaping. That eliminated the car and truck sales that were taking place on the weekends, as well as a lot of the trash debris that was thrown in the area just because it looked like a vacant area. Speed humps, the neighborhood had actually been working in it, had formed a traffic team and were working on traffic concern issues before the Building Strong neighborhoods. However, the speed humps were installed during the Building Strong neighborhoods on South 82nd Street. Neighbors are still requesting speed humps on 80th Place. However, we'll wait to see how the rubberized cushions go, because this 80th Place is a designated fire route. Program successes included 1,275 households were engaged, 337 tons of debris removed, 42 team meetings, and the valuable new cooperative partnerships between not only residents and city staff, but residents and businesses. When we looked in Council District 2 for one of the alley abandonment projects, residents have teamed with Playground Installers, who is a commercial development to the south of them, and Playground Installers is working with residents for alley gates and the installation of those. Special neighborhood projects and the value of just bringing the neighbors together. The work continues, the alley abandonments we continue to work on, and gating of those alleys, speed humps, HOA training, block watches continue to form. We've got the GAIN event coming up on October 20th that neighborhoods will be participating in, and special cleanup projects. So what's in store for 2007-2008? We continue to plan one neighborhood in each district. We've already kicked off the September meeting in Council District 4. In November, we'll be Council District 2 with a kickoff meeting on October 25th. January, we'll see Council District 3. March, Council District 5. April, Council District 6. And June, Council District 1 of 2008.
The other difference that we have this year is that we'll have $60,000 that's allocated, $30,000 from CDBG funds, and $30,000 in general funds to work towards dealing with some of the issues that we have in some of these areas. And the other thing I'd like to say is we could not have done this with the cooperation of the council members, and the rest of the city staff. It's been a great success. We're very proud that we have these accomplishments, and they could not have occurred without the help of all the city departments that participated in the program, and we want to thank them very much for that. And we also want to thank our outside external partners who came to some of our meetings, who shared their information and really worked closely with us to make this happen. And with that, we'll open it up to any questions.
Mayor, thank you. First of all, I want to really compliment the staff. They've really taken this program during the last year, and now as we go into this next year, there's a lot of enthusiasm, I think, from the staff to take this on. I appreciate the leadership that the Neighborhood Services Department has taken in doing this. This really has an opportunity to really bring a lot of our resources from the city concentrated in an area and really see an impact and a difference. And I think that's pretty rewarding for those of us who do this, you know, try to work and make a difference in our community. So I appreciate the staff from all the different departments who have helped out. I think the thing that was kind of more eye-opening to me this last kickoff we had was how much it's grown now, not just beyond the city departments now, how much we see coming from other nonprofits who want to join in and participate in these kickoffs. And I think that's very impressive, and I think that begins to validate the validity or the value, of this program, is because of others outside the city looking at it and saying, this is a great opportunity for us to join with the city and make a contribution in these neighborhoods. So this is, as we already noticed, from last year to this year, we've already started looking at making changes, trying to find ways to improve it. We want to keep doing that. I think one of the areas that we want to work with, too, is maybe working with the school district and being able to identify needs within the neighborhoods where we could join there also. And so there's a lot of other opportunities as we move forward. But we appreciate the council supporting this and really actually encouraging and moving us along in this direction, and hopefully we'll continue to refine this and really find a way to really continue making an impact in our neighborhoods. Thank you.
In my district, there's a lot of alleys. It's the older part of the city. And it seems to be because of the early rains that we had this year, we've got a preponderance of tumbleweed material. Is there anything the city could do in spraying those alleys to help the homeowners out? I mean, you can go in and take those weeds out, and in 15 days, they're back. And they seem to be taking over the alleys a lot in my district. Do we have a contract with one of our landscape crews that could do any weed spraying that would just increase the overall appearance?
That sounds like a question.
Lenny, I think we just left. Mayor, Councilman Whalen, why don't we get back to you on that, and we can look at
it. I don't know what the cost would be, but it's an ongoing problem.
We have some dollars. I know we have some dollars allocated for alley maintenance. I don't know if that's a service we've done in the past, but certainly
we can
look at it.
I don't believe it is. You know, the homeowner is responsible for the area under our code behind their property line, but it's just a continual battle.
Yeah, we can take a look at that.
Vice Mayor.
Thank you. You've done great work on this, and it really is impressive to see what happens. I do have some concerns about the tonnage that's coming out of there. You know, it's great to say we picked up this many tons of things, but I wonder how much of that is recyclable. And if we've looked at the possibility, and the thought occurred to me last night as we were talking about, well, we can get you, you know, it might be helpful for you to have clean sweep dumpsters out here because, and the comment was made about somebody who had recently moved in and had a lot of boxes, and I thought, I don't want those going into the regular dumpsters. I want them being recycled. Are we looking at any efforts to have something along the lines of taking a blue dumpster out there that's the recycling dumpster? Jack, I'm almost looking at you on this one because...
Susan's our expert. She came from our solid waste area, but we do have different type roll-offs, green sweep and clean sweep. But I think Susan could talk to you a lot about what they collect.
And I was able to get with that gentleman last night and tell him about our recycling center over on North Power. So he could take his cardboard there rather than putting it in his dumpster and utilizing his blue barrel and getting him the number for solid waste. So I was able to do that because, yeah, anything that we can keep out of the landfill, we certainly want to. I think we can do a better job as outreach coordinators is scheduling the boxes to bring in more green boxes where we see that there's a lot of landscaping or tree trimming in the neighborhood that could be done. As far as... bringing in maybe boxes for steel recycling or something, we can certainly talk to Solid Waste about that, but right now I'm not aware of any programs like that.
We might want to analyze what it is that we're pulling out of there, if there really is very much that's recyclable, because it's one of those things that it just, you know, every time I see that, it's like money down the drain. It's a three-pronged hit. You put something in the landfill, you have the tipping fee for putting it in the landfill, you've taken up the space, you have the gasoline cost of getting things that, you know, as the landfill fills up faster, then we have to take things out farther and farther. And in addition, we actually get money for the things that we recycle. So they're just, I guess it was more than three-pronged. There are a lot of ways that saves us money or we have cost avoidance on it. So if you could kind of look at that as you're going through this next year, I would appreciate that. Thank you.
And we'll take a better look. Okay. Any other comments on this item? Thank you for your presentation. Item number four is here a presentation discuss and provide direction on pool projects and priorities.
Good morning, Mayor and Council members. I'd like to introduce Andrea Moore, who's on my left. Andrea oversees our planning and development for the department, and on my right we have Darla Armsfield, who oversees our aquatics programs. The purpose of our meeting here today before you is twofold. First, staff is seeking your input and asking for you to provide direction on including amenities into the scope of our pool projects, as well as number two, provide direction on the prioritization of these pool projects. We've been before you on several occasions to discuss these issues, so I don't want to duplicate things that have been discussed in the past. However, I think it would be prudent to highlight a few of the historical points that surround our pools. And the first is, beginning with Carson, Brimhall, Stapley, and Shepherd, it's important to know that those are our four amenity pools that we have serving or in the city of Mesa. Those four pools have been identified as having a service circle or a service radius of 2 miles, while Rhodes, Taylor, Mesa Junior, Powell, Poston, and Fremont are pools that are without amenities and service an area of approximately 1.5 miles. And as you know, Parkway is primarily used for special needs and therapy use, and then Keno is our 50-meter competition pool that we have in the city, which was built in 1968, and it's scheduled, and we'll talk about this as we move through the presentation, scheduled to reopen in 2009. In June of 2005, Council approved shifting our indoor aquatic center quality of life funds, which totaled $25.1 million, to smaller citywide projects or other aquatic facilities in the city. And a year ago, Council directed staff to proceed with the design work on the Keno pool as well as the Rhodes pool. To date, the design of Keno is at 50% and Rhodes is at 30%. The preliminary cost estimates for these two projects, Keno is at $8.2 million, while Rhodes is coming in at roughly $5.9 million, respectively. These figures do include some amenities at both of those sites. The task of prioritizing these pools is a fairly complex and challenging process. It continues to be a moving target. In a general sense, we looked at the following factors. First, we had to work within the confines of our funding, which is a balance of $20.6 million, and we needed to continue to reevaluate where our pools are at currently in terms of their condition, as we are experiencing differences in material breakdown. Some of the newer pools are in worse shape than some of our older pools, simply because of the way the material is broken down at certain sites and the way that they were constructed. We needed to look at the changes in the code requirements that have been placed upon us from a national level as well as county levels, and then we are continually evaluating what our users are looking for and what are their needs and how we can meet those, not only from a Parks and Recreation standpoint, but from a Mesa Public Schools standpoint, as they are joint partners in these facilities. With these factors in mind, we proceeded, as you know, to move forward with the Keno design and move forward with that as our number one priority, with the following features and contributions from our partners, Mesa Public Schools. We have developed a design that includes a 50-meter competition pool with a bulkhead, a 6-lane warm-up pool, along with a small amenity pool that has the zero depth with a single slide, lots of shaded spectator seating, some additional parking at that facility, and then of course are taking advantage of the Mesa Public Schools contribution, of which in this particular case they are providing us with some land as well as a $500,000 towards this project. At this time, I would like just to have Darla walk through this site design and what are some of the advantages that we will see from a programming standpoint.
Mayor Hoffman. Council members, Keno was, it's about 40 years old, and when it was first constructed, it was a premier competition site. And Mesa, a lot of USA swimming events, synchronized swimming events, USA diving, high school competition took place at Keno. And as the facility aged, about 8 years ago, it became disqualified as a competition site for several reasons: depth, gutter systems, the way the pools inlets were rotating the water. So when we sat down to reconfigure this facility, our main goal was to restore it to that premier competition site as it used to be. So some of the things that you're going to notice as you look at the plan is that we now have two separate pools. There, the code changes are driving the need for that. When the depth code changed, it started off at the state level, then went to the county level, then went to the National High School Federation level, and then USA Swimming level. The requirement for depth is at the minimum 5.5 feet of water. So that particular depth makes it very difficult for recreation swimming users to use it and for the instruction. So what we've done here is we've went ahead and made it two separate pools. One is a separate competition pool with a bulkhead, and the purpose of the bulkhead is to help us configure the water so that we can offer multiple competition. It could include a 25-yard, 25-meter, 50-meter, a water polo, synchronized swimming. So it is primarily going to be, and then the depth of the water, as you'll see, is going to be a constant of 6 feet up until the diving well when that starts. And then the instructional pool is going to be used for swimming lessons. It's got shallow water that will allow us to take the lower level classes into that and teach the beginning instruction classes. It also does have a one slide for a play amenity. We felt that that was very important. It helps to boost attendance. And then we have completed multiple use configuration. One of the things that was brought up at the last meeting that we came to you was shade. And we've actually added more shade than what you see here today. There, the best shade is that is on the west side that faces east. So we've maximized that shade for multiple configurations of competition. And then we went ahead and added it on the south side on the north side, they'll be facing south. And then you'll see a lot of turf behind it. It's really important when we do large invitational events that you have lots of area for what's called team staging, where you'll see teams bring canopies in, and as well as parents will bring 10 by 10 canopies, and they will go and sit underneath their canopy and then just go sit on the bleachers when the race is about to occur. So we've incorporated, with Mesa Public Schools cooperation, a lot of turf into the existing framework. Then another thing that you'll notice that's a little different is we do have in this facility now enclosed bathrooms. Keno is a year-round facility, and so if any of you have ever been to Keno in December and January and swam, it's very, very cold. So we did go ahead and add an opportunity for some enclosed bathroom changing and then a small classroom.
One thing, too, that we could note as it relates to this footprint, as Darla was talking about this turf area, this is currently where the soccer field is that is kind of almost behind the church area, though. So we've shifted this down, and then with Mesa Public Schools' input, they were wanting to add some additional parking, and the school sits here. So this would now be some additional parking that could help with that facility and some of Mesa Public Schools' needs. In this particular design. Moving forward, and we'll certainly come.
Excuse me, is this pool heated?
Yes.
Any idea of the hybrid heating that we just got some information on as a potential for this pool? A combination of solar and.
It's been discussed, but we're still researching the type of heating that will be in there. But at your suggestion, we definitely can take a look at that.
I don't know if you guys got the same thing I did. It looks interesting as to where you could, some of the hybrid vehicle, it's solar and gas or propane.
We are reusing some existing boilers, and that does dictate the direction that we go because we are trying to reuse as much of the existing facility as possible to help with cost. So that might drive that result as well.
Yes.
Thank you. How far, this feels like, as I'm looking at it, that you've moved it quite a bit to the north. Is that true?
Right. And that's, as I've mentioned, that is towards the existing soccer field that is there.
Okay.
Which is north of the swimming pool.
So it shifted probably, maybe 40 feet north?
Roughly or more.
Okay. Thank you.
Continuing on as we proceeded to prioritize the rest of the pools, we started looking at our preferred service areas and trying to strategically place pools in those geographical locations, or at least put the money into to pools that would help service our city. We looked at that. We also, as I mentioned, reevaluated what the current condition was of these facilities, and then spent time with our partners, Mesa Public Schools, and seeking their input and learning what their needs were as it related to their competitive program as well as their educational programs, and then reassessed and looked into and researched what opportunities we could provide to our customers or our patrons that would be patronizing these facilities. If we go to the next slide, I'm going to have Andrea kind of walk us through the process that we did as we looked at our service circles and trying to strategically place these amenities in these pools.
Mayor, Council, what we did is try to look at a different level of service for the different pools, since we have so many that are aging and limited funds. So what you see on the service circle map, kind of big on the Elmo, the blue circles are the pools that have already been renovated into amenity pools. They serve the largest number of people and still meet our lessening competitive requirements. So that's Carson, Stapley, Shepherd, and Brimhall. And those are pretty well spread across the city. What we're proposing to do is renovate Rhodes and Taylor into amenity pools as well, take some of the pressure off the pools that have already been renovated, address some of our maintenance needs on those pools. So a combination of programming and deteriorating conditions, be able to use the existing funds that we have left to fix those areas.
So as we looked and considered these things, our recommendation is to renovate Rhodes as our number two priority, followed by Taylor Junior High. It's important to note that our recommendation does include adding amenities at both of these sites, Rhodes and Taylor. These amenities, we feel, are a key component to our recommendation. Rhodes has struggled with attendance, as did Carson prior to its renovation, and we will show a graph here in a minute about using Carson kind of as a case study that we will hopefully have that type of success at Rhodes. But we do truly feel that this is the best service or geographical locations that we could spend our money in, as well as it addresses a severe deterioration of these two pools. It meets Mesa Public Schools' desire for educational and competitive uses, and it also, we believe, will meet our customer needs for the amenities that they would like to see. Here are just some quick shots of some of the issues that we're dealing with at both these pools, Rhodes as well as Taylor, in particular with their gutter systems, which you are familiar with and have seen in the past. So when we get into the footprint of what we are proposing or recommending, you'll see that this particular design is very similar to what we've done in the past at Carson and at Brimhall. It has a zero-depth entry. It has the ability to still host meets in the competition area, as well as synchronized swimming and diving in the dive tank area. One of the things that we are recommending is that we place certain amenities inside of this footprint, such as a splash pad that you can see in the upper portion of the layout, and then some sort of amenity to the to my left, and whether that be a slide, a flow rider, or different things that we will discuss here in a moment. But our research shows that without having these amenities, and when we look at this particular chart, we can look at Carson back in 2004-2005 that has a similar design of Rhodes currently. It was, and we do this on an attendance per hour so that we're comparing apples to apples, because some pools are open more than others. So Carson at that particular year, 2004-2005, was experiencing about 9 open swim users an hour. And after 2007, once the construction was completed, Carson moved into our top 3 in terms of attendance within our pool system. We're hopeful that by doing the amenities at Rhodes, that we will have the same success, and that Rhodes Junior High pool would move into the top 5 in terms of attendance and help revitalize that particular pool. Here are some of the amenities that we are researching that could possibly go into this footprint or these facilities. This is a traditional double loop slide. This is an amenity that we did put in at Carson. The splash pad, as I mentioned, are not necessarily new concepts, but something that we do have a few of these features at our existing pools, but not in this type of a configuration and to this extent. The other items that another amenity that we're looking into is is called the Flow Rider. These things are becoming popular with the teenagers, and you can boogie board as well as surf on these. They are they can be either a two-man or a single rider. The other amenity that we are also exploring is a fast current or a lazy river. And so with these amenities and with these priorities, in summary, where we're at to date, as it stands with Keno still remaining our number one priority at $8.2 million, and that includes the footprint that Darla has walked us through, priority number two, Rhodes Pool renovation with an amenity, including the Mesa Public Schools contribution of $500,000, which would bring us to a total of $5.9 million for that project. And our third priority would be Taylor Pool with the similar footprint as we've shown with the roads layout and an amenity totaling $6 million for our top three priorities. When we add those three together, we'll end up with a subtotal of approximately $20,250,000, which basically uses our remaining balance of our quality of life money that was earmarked for aquatics programs. With that, we would like to ask or have you asking us any questions, or and we can take your comments.
Questions and comments. Scott.
I know the title of this is Pool Renovation Projects and Priorities, but part of the discussion we've had on pools is, will there be any funding left over for an east side pool, a brand new pool? So the question is there going to be any money for an east side pool, a brand new pool?
I'm going to go back. I think they've taken the PowerPoint off, but let me go back to the to our chart here where we have there you go. Can you get that up there? You can see
that's
that
the one. Comments and questions. Do we really need that one?
Here, I'll just grab it. When we total these up in terms of when we look at Mesa Junior, Powell, Post, and Fremont, and then we've labeled the southeast or the pool that you refer to out in southeast Mesa, the total would be with all of these over $50 million.
That does include the new pool in there?
It does. Okay. However, like we've mentioned,
let's get the PowerPoint up. Let's go to the second to last slide. Do we not have it? We can do it on the screen and not have to use the Elmo. That doesn't show very well. I think this is an important point. There we go.
Okay. Okay, the last point on there, $8.7 million for the new. Has there been any discussion with Mesa schools as to what location they would like?
We've discussed at length with Mesa Public Schools, obviously Keno Keno and Rhodes, as well as Taylor Pool. They are in support of what we have here. However, they are certainly wanting to and trying to figure out ways that we could fund a pool out in the southeast Mesa area. I know that there are some of their officials, in particular Steve Hogan, who's their athletic director, has been working with various groups out there to try to raise money for that particular pool, because they understand that once we have spent our $20 million that we will have no more money to fund that. So we are working on other alternatives to try to come up with some more money.
Okay, but do they know where they want it yet? Do we know where that's going to be built? Or are they still trying to discuss that, figure that out?
I think they're still researching, doing their studies as to exactly what site that would be at.
Okay.
Bobby?
Thank you, and I see Steve Hogan is here in the back. Has there been any conversation about, well, I'm looking at this and you have, and I don't want to upset somebody by knocking their name off the list, but when you look at the circles, and I looked at all your circles that you had there, I could identify high schools that went with those circles. So I'm assuming that Westwood is now practicing at the Carson Pool, that Dobson will be practicing at the Rhodes Pool, that Mountain View maybe is at the Stapley Pool. I don't know if that's where they are, but I'm just guessing. Red Mountain at the Shepherd Pool, Mesa High at the Brimhall Pool. Where's Skyline?
Right now they're practicing at Fremont.
And Fremont is not one of the ones that we're looking at for changing right now.
Right. It about 7-6 years ago, we put a water slide in, is when the quality of life started. Its condition, we think, is stable enough that it potentially could make it until we're able to, at some future date, put the renovations on bond. so we're comfortable that it will last a little longer than some of our other facilities.
I guess what I'm really getting to is what drives having Taylor redone as opposed to going farther east and putting one out there that, that services the broader Southeast Mesa area, the Skyline area.
Mayor and Councilmember Walters, that has been the discussion that we have had as well, and where we have come back to the to our recommendation is that we are at this stage trying to maintain those facilities that we currently have, and bring those up to code before we move forward with any new construction.
My concern is that, that doesn't really address where we're having significant growth, where we have a lot of young people, and I don't know what the analysis is in terms of who uses these pools, but my experience is that it was my kids who were using the pool. It wasn't my husband and me. And when I look at where we have growth, it seems to me that the growth of young people is much greater the farther southeast you go. And so I'm just a little concerned about that piece of it. I don't have any heartburn over 1 and 2. I do have some heartburn over 3 versus the addressing the area in the southeast part of the community. Thank you.
Okay. Tom?
Do you have any attendance figures that go back beyond 2004, 2005? I'd really like to see how long Rhodes or Poston or some of these have been averaging 5 to 6 attendees an hour, because I mean that really makes me question the validity of the underlying assumption here.
No, Mayor and Councilmember Rawls, we do have those numbers, and we can certainly provide those to you.
Could you go back 15 years for me?
How far?
15.
I don't know if we can go back that far.
Can you go back as far as you can then?
We can do that.
Whatever you have. I mean, I don't want you to go.
No, can't do that.
I was trying to put a quantified. No, we got 3 years here. Don't be.
Can't do that either.
I guess I'm trying to figure out, is our Taylor and Rhodes now competitive pools?
Competitive and
we'll in go the ahead sense, and I mean, that. Is there any competitions held there?
Councilman Rawls, yes. The Dobson, well, no, actually, Rhodes is a 25-meter facility, but we do hold competition there. In the summer program, we hold competition at Taylor, but we can only hold our backstroke meets there because it has very shallow water. So we used to hold competition, but when the codes changed, we had to pull our competition from there. Rhodes, the team practices, the high school team will practice there, but we can't compete there because it's a 25-meter facility.
Under the new footprint for the Rhodes Taylor model, what's the length of the competition pool?
It's going to be reduced to 25 yards. Okay. On the new one? You're talking about the new renovation?
This one.
Yes, it will be reduced to 25 yards. And then Dobson High School will relocate and compete and practice at that facility.
Okay.
From Powell. They are currently at Powell.
Okay. I guess what I would need to know is how much of the cost of the Rhodes and Taylor pools are for the amenities that I understand what you're saying, and your chart seems to suggest that if you build it, they will come, particularly given what you see with Carson. But on the other hand, if there's serious deterioration in pools downstream, I think Mesa is the next one that's looking at renovation. How much money, if we just do the renovations at Rhodes and Taylor without adding all the amenities, because I'm more concerned about health and safety in some of these pools than I am in amenities. So has there been a cost breakdown as to how much money we save at Rhodes and how much money we save at Taylor if we just fix them?
Mayor, Councilmember Rawls, we looked into that, and in terms of the amenities that I've outlined here today, they range anywhere from $500,000 to $1 million. And so,
total?
If we $500,000 to $1 million
total for pool?
No, for each particular each pool. So
right,
if we,
not
if we
not
bring
each
the,
amenity. That's what I was trying to clarify.
I'm sorry.
Not each amenity, each pool.
No, each
okay.
pool. So
all right, all right. Okay.
So if we were to take Rhodes and Taylor, and let's say that we go at the extreme of the amenities, we're talking $2 million. And
right.
So we looked at, as we go down to a Mesa Junior or a Powell or Poston, we were still $2 million short to move on to another project. because that was something that we were looking at to see if we could stretch this out a little further. And then when we came up with a shortfall of about $2 million, it didn't get us to where we needed to go to renovate another
pool.
So
again, and that was the purpose of my question, is I wanted to know if we didn't do the amenities,
could we
is there enough money to fix to fix the code problems, to fix the tear-eating plaster, to fix the gutter problems, et cetera, that we all have seen at the pools? And the answer is no. So do we leave $2 million sitting in a pool, no pun intended, waiting for other money to get to Mesa Junior High, or do we utilize it to build the facility that hopefully will attract more people than Rhodes is currently attracting? Because I don't want to spend $5.9 million to attract five people an hour. I think that is a horrible waste of taxpayer money. If you get it up, and if by doing it at Rhodes, it turns itself into some of these yellow lines that we're seeing at Brimhall, Stakely, and Carson, then it makes sense. So that's sort of why I'd like to see what was going on at Rhodes before.
Right.
And I understand why it was so low in 07, because there was a cancellation of the one of the programs,
right,
there, so you didn't have as many people.
Right. Council member, I think the problem here is that Rhodes can't even be used right now by the high school,
right,
as its current configuration. So, where the city kind of came down is, to your point, just renovating it for just the high school purpose doesn't then really drive other people there during the summer.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were trying to think, okay, how do we're going to go invest, let's say it's $4.9 million. Take the $1 million out for the amenities. Again, if it only serves the purpose during the school year, yes, it's brought it up to code, it serves the high school, that's good and well, but we don't get the full benefit. Our concern is trying to get maximize the benefit once we're going to go in there and make the improvements.
Right.
And we struggle with this because, as you can see, even without a new pool on the south, from the east, southeast side, we're $20 million short, more than $20 million short, just to keep up with the existing pools we have. Assuming that is our continued philosophy, that we want to continue to bring all pools up to code at some point into the future. Part of what we're looking at here is, I don't know if those days is that, if we continue doing that, or do we try to look at these, that's one reason we did these service areas, to try to see maybe instead of doing a combination of competition plus amenity, serves two purposes and they can serve a larger area, so maybe then we just do a fewer number of pools but at a bigger scale, a combination, if you would. And so we're in this dilemma too. We recognize, and it's been said, we'd love to go put a pool somewhere on the southeast side. We know that there's a demand there. By doing that too, though, we leave behind pools that we have, but we own and operate today, that we're very concerned about into the future because we don't have the funding to even keep those maintained.
Brian, did you have something you wanted to throw before
Along Chris's lines, if we rebuild roads without the amenity, we're concerned that we see the same attendance numbers that we have before. And if that's the case, then roads would probably not be our second priority. We would then start, if that's the direction, we would have to shift priorities and look differently.
And I understand that. I was trying to get a handle of finances, and Claudia, addressing your concern about Taylor versus somewhere east, I think you may be right that there's a lot of young people and a lot of growth out on the east side, but I think they probably tend to be, well, how do I say this comfortably, they're more likely to perhaps have their own pools, or their homeowners associations might have pools, as opposed to some of the people in the older part of town who aren't going to have that ability to do it themselves. So I appreciate what you're saying. I think Taylor makes more sense because of the population that it serves in that 2-mile radius. But thanks for your answers. It makes me feel more comfortable. You'd really put me on a hot spot if you told me that by eliminating the amenities,
yeah,
you'd have $4 million and we could almost we'd almost do another pool. Then I would really be hard pressed. But given the way that it is now, I prefer to use it rather than just leaving the $2 million sitting there. So.
And then, Mayor, also, I'm sorry if I could add to maybe clarify Councilmember Walter's statement, and don't want to put words in Mr. Hogan's mouth, but if we were to do this plan, we talked about where the swim teams swim, it would be my assumption that probably either Mesa High would move to Taylor or Red Mountain would move to Taylor, probably from Fremont, or to give that Fremont and Brimhall both the use of that. So, the
Vice Mayor.
Thank you. And I understand what you're saying, but if you look at some of the areas that have the highest attendance at their pools, they're areas where you would make the same assumptions that you just made about Southeast Mesa. One of the problems that we are having with the conversation that we're having today is we are only talking about the city side of these pool uses. And frankly, the city side of the pool use is somewhat negligible when you compare it to a year-long use that occurs on the part of the school district. So we didn't talk about every junior high kid who has a swimming class. We didn't talk about, and I'm assuming, Steve, I'm assuming that you still have junior high participation in swimming. Do you want to come up? It's easier than you're nodding from the back. That we still have that kind of use where kids are using these, and I don't know what your time frame is anymore, if it's spring and fall, if it's different for the boys' classes versus the girls' classes. What amount of time would you say the pools get used by the kids in the schools?
Okay, well, first off, your first question was, do I want to come up? And you didn't listen to my response.
I didn't. Actually, I just no. Ask staff. They'll tell you. I ignore them all the time.
But now that I'm here, yes, we, at all of our junior highs that we currently have, Smith being the only junior high that does not have a pool, we have a swim unit that takes place in the fall and also in the spring. They go between, depending on the temperature. We went all the way up to some of our pools up through last week. They were doing swim units, both boys and girls. So, yes, we do use those.
And if we were looking at it today, my guess is that we would have a model where the pools were located at the high schools instead of at the junior highs. Because as a financial model, I think this one poses, you know, quite a few problems. And that's why I started looking at it on the basis of high school attendance boundary areas, because those are also the places where you have the competitive swim teams.
Right.
How much of the year are your swim teams practicing?
I'm sorry?
What part of the year are your swimming teams practicing?
Currently they are, as far as the high school season goes, they begin in August, will run through about mid-November. And then when you would add the club and out of season, some of even the high schools, they can swim during their sixth hour and do some of those things. It pretty much goes year-round.
Yeah. That was my understanding from talking to a swimmer, that they were using those facilities pretty much year round.
Yeah, for us to be competitive, our kids need to swim year round.
So when I'm looking at this not on the basis of just the recreational amenities, which are great, but if you look at the numbers on that isn't the whole picture. The bigger picture is that we have people who are swimming competitively. This is like ball fields, only it's got water in it. And my concern is that we really aren't catching that whole southeast part of the valley. And my second concern is there isn't another set of money that's coming along. I mean, when I look in the pipeline, there isn't anything. We aren't talking about bonds for that. This is the money that we have. And I am concerned that if we leave that area out, that they are left out forever. And when I say forever, that's an overstatement. But past the time when it might really do the most good for the young people who are participating there, certainly, you can bump people from one pool to another, and you can move the kids from who are practicing at Fremont and, you know, move the Mesa High kids back over to Taylor and move the kids at Fremont over to Brimhall. But it still begs the question whether or not that was the best direction to go when you look at those big service circles and what your service territory is for those pools, and whether or not that really is fair to those folks in the southeast part of the community. And that's my concern. Thank you, Mayor.
And see if I can boil everything I'm thinking about down to something at least cogent. To respond to Tom, I can agree with a lot of what he said, particularly with the health risk. I think the joke I had a while back, which wasn't much of a joke, looking at the pictures, I needed a tetanus shot. So I think we do need to absolutely deal with the health and safety risk first before we get into some of the extras. But given what I've heard today, I'd rather you spend that $2 million on things that are going to make these pool more usable than to just hold that money But that said, I don't want to use the idea of the new pool. Well, we'll have a new pool in Southeast Mesa if we have enough money. That shouldn't be a bank of cash to use as to handle cost overrides for the remodel of these other pools. If holding back on those amenities, that $2 million handles cost overrides for some of the these other pools so that we can have that Southeast Mesa pool, then maybe that's what we should do. I don't know if that number works out for you, Brian, but that, it's a thought we have to have. I'm looking at this map. Part of the financial problem with Mesa, the model we've used forever, is that new growth pays for old growth. And if you want to look at that map, this is exactly what happened. The new growth, fairly well done. We're still growing a little bit, but not at the rate that we used to be. And the last area to grow out is Southeast Mesa. So who doesn't have a pool? Southeast Mesa. So all that money is going into the maintenance of pools in a lot of our other districts. And like Claudia had mentioned, Shepherd, Stapley, even a lot of folks up there have a swimming pool in their backyard too. But these are for a different purpose. I have a swimming pool in my backyard. My kids learned to swim, or more appropriately, learned not to drown at Brimhall School. That's where we brought them to learn how to swim. That's where a lot of parents bring them. When my children have school events that involve swimming, they go to Brimhall. They don't come to my backyard. You talk about depth of my pool, it's nowhere. I'm pretty sure you can't even do a 25-meter swim in that one, so they go to Brimhall pools. There are no pools here. We're also challenged in my district from the fact we have, well, four, but two major school districts. You have Gilbert School District everywhere south of Baseline, and the Mesa Public Schools everywhere north. Well, the town of, and this is the confusion we get all the time, the school districts are not run by the city. The school districts are a separate governing board. The town of Gilbert isn't going to spend any money to put a pool in a high school or a junior high school that's in the city of Mesa. The city of Mesa is going to have to do that, not to mention the fact, though, that would service our area. Fortunately, the Mesa Public Schools will, but that's about, well, geographically, that's less than a third of the district. Population-wise, it's about half. So we're torn with this problem of school districts. Where do you put the pool? Geographically, it makes sense in one place, but then you have the school district challenge in both. I'm another concern I have is I went to a neighborhood meeting last night at Parkwood Ranch, and we had a conversation with a gentleman, this particular one was about fire stations, but the answer was, where are our fire stations? The west side has their fire stations, where's mine? You know, take that argument to here, the west sides have their pools, where's our pools? We're taxpayers, we're struggling with response times, we're struggling, we don't have any pools over here, we have fewer parks in this district, where is all that? And it creates this east-west rift in the city that we just don't need. So I don't know that I have the answer yet, but I guess I'll go back to the other. If the $2 million is the cost override to make sure that we get another pool over on this side, maybe that's something we got to look at there.
Mayor, maybe, Rhett, I'm sorry, stepping in here, maybe we can, if I'm hearing the council's direction, maybe today what we talk about is the approval of Keno going forward and our roads priority going forward. If the desire is then for us to relook at the evaluation as Taylor is our third priority and get back with our partners of Mesa Public Schools and discuss preferences and locations for a Southeast facility, keeping in mind that a Southeast facility right now, I think our desire would be to replicate a Keno type model on that side of town to get another competitive facility out there, that is going to be more costly than a Taylor design. We would probably need to sit down with Mesa Public Schools and discuss that in depth and see where our money can actually stretch to, and have them in a partnership arrangement and see where we go from there.
What do you?
I don't know if you need a motion to that effect, but I'd like to see that happen. And I'd like to involve, okay. I think there was some conversation about some private fundraising that Steve was working on. I'd like to see some of that as we're looking at the possibility of a competitive pool out on that side of of town. Obviously, well, I shouldn't say obviously, from my perspective, I think you have to go back to our partners at Mesa Schools and have that conversation if we're going to look for some different direction. But I'm comfortable with moving ahead with one and two.
Let me pose a question. If there were, and I'm surprised the circle for Keno wouldn't be bigger than it's drawn, if there were 50-meter pools with warm-up pools and slide amenities, I thought that circle would be substantially larger.
And Mary, it probably should be. Keno really is a citywide, and it should just imagine, right now it is the pool, so it should really encompass the whole city.
Right, and so my concept is those individuals that want to use a facility that has the amenities, I think they'll actually get in a vehicle and drive or take a bus or whatever it is to get to those pools. So instead of doing the model that we've done in the past with 10 pools or however many we have here in the city, to concentrate our efforts on two or three major pools that are geographically dispersed and have very heavy use. And maybe we get out of this old model that we used to do and create a new one. So I'm more trying to do a new step instead of continue to fix and renovate. Some of these renovation costs are new pool costs. So if you're going to do that, why don't you put the new pools where you want them and just kind of start over with the thinking process. Clean the slate and say, if we didn't have a single pool in Mesa, where would we put them? Where would it function the best? How would it work with the schools and the community? And try that as an approach. And I'm not sure what your outcome would be, but we have $20 million left, and I'd like to spend it wisely, and I'm not sure that I quite feel comfortable with patching and doing this and that without at least going through that thought process. Well, that's kind of my suggestion. I know that doesn't help you here a lot today.
No, Mayor, actually, it does very much, because that is our biggest concern is what do we do with the pools that are already there, we don't have sufficient funding, but we know have significant deterioration, and that there is no immediate or even near-term funding to support those. The decisions we make today essentially means that pools from Taylor through Fremont will have to be evaluated each year as to whether or not they can continue to serve as a pool. And then what we'll move to, and actually, you know, this is what we need to hear, is the direction is that we will set up more, as opposed to just following the model of every junior high, we may now looking at more from a regional perspective and moving towards kind of a southeast side and with the other pools that we already have on the west side. So we certainly are willing to do that. This is the discussion we need to have. I only want to let the council know and understand is that there may be a time in the future where we will have to come back and say that as a result of not having the funding and not having to address that, and we know it's going to happen regardless of any decision today, by the way, that there may be pools that we will have to put aside for a while. We'll not be able to program because the funding will not be available for it, and the conditions of the pool will not allow us to continue to use it.
And as Tom pointed out, if you have 5 users per hour and you've got 2 or 3 lifeguards, I don't know if that, I mean, give them a pass to LA Fitness or something, might be cheaper. So there's also the economics of it. But as Claudia pointed out, we have not figured in these numbers the usage by the schools, and that is a big component. And also need to study that aspect of it to see what the schools would do if that wasn't available. But I'd still like to look a little bit more holistic at the whole pool program for the next 30 years and whether we need a new model from what we've done in the past. Tom?
And Mayor, I agree. And I mean, it's always, it's hard to let a pool go that's been open and served the community for a long time. But let me just look at this map hypothetically here, and if you did the roads in the Keno, you'd basically have 3 pools with big circles, and Keno being an extra big circle on the west side of town. And my map doesn't show me exactly where the lines are here, but then you've got Stapley, Shepherd, and Brimhall sort of on the old east side of town. And if you don't do Taylor, then you've got the whole southeast part that has essentially nothing.
You know, between the, and it's been a model that's worked well for the city and for the school district for years, but it may be time, given the fact that, as you described, there's so much of this benefit from these pools that goes to the school district. The next one may have to be more, I don't want to have Deb Duvall call me here, but you know, the school district may have to pay more of the capital cost if we want to get another one out there. But maybe we do need to rethink Taylor and save some of that money toward the east. Because you still have a pretty good coverage of the city without Taylor, except for the far east. So, and I think you're right, Mayor. I think if somebody wants to do a Sunsplash, or I'm not sure I'd build just the wave thing. I'm not the flow riders. I'm not sure that Wave Yard would appreciate the competition. I'm comfortable with what Claudia is suggesting, which is moving forward with one and two, but rethinking three and perhaps pushing it east. I think you persuaded me, Claudia.
And Mike?
Just thinking out of the box for a moment. We were all around, many of us were around, for the heated discussions of the Aquatic Center, where we were going to put it, and back and forth. We settled on a parcel of land at First Avenue and McDonald as the location for that Aquatic Center. If we're really hurting for money, perhaps the sale of that piece of land and then the taking of that capital and putting it into this pool project might make some sense. Just something to think about or to look at. I don't know what that parcel is worth, but my guess it would be somewhere in the $2 to $3 million range.
Other discussion? Claudia.
Mayor, I think that I jumped ahead and did what you had just suggested, because I created a new model, and my new model was that we look at it on high school circles as opposed to looking at it on junior high school circles. But once again, I think that we need to go back to Mesa Public Schools and talk about that, and that's why I identified those spots that I did. Mm-hmm. And I agree. I think we're going to have to look at these and have the school district look at them as they come up, and they're going to have to also help make that determination of what happens next. I know they have budget concerns, we have budget concerns, we all work within those constraints and see, you know, how they, if their program, how they might want to restructure their program to address those changes. Thank you.
Okay, so the decision-making process here this morning, Scott?
I just want to make sure that there are no imminent life safety or health issues in any of these pools that we need to address.
There will be in the future.
But right now, is there anything we have to do?
No, I don't think that right now. But my point is, there won't be a fund to deal with it.
Okay.
That's consistent now with what I hear the philosophy is, look at it more from as opposed to going and repairing a smaller serving pool or service area pool, we're going to take the resources and use it to focus on larger regional pools. And I think that's what we heard.
Yeah, but that's longer term. That's why I intentionally said imminent. Nobody's going to go in and step on a rusty rebar sticking out.
The staff will make sure that those issues are not addressed.
We're good.
But there will be a time. I just want to make clear that time will come. We're not talking 5-10 years out. It could happen next year, in the next year or so. I mean, some of these pools are that condition. So I just trying to make sure that we don't walk away from this meeting we understand that there, and that was essentially part of our recommendation anyway, that we knew that was going to happen. And we're not just talking about Taylor now, we're talking about the other pools too.
Okay, Mike?
To move it along, I think we need to make the decision on, and I think I heard it already, on Keno to get that project moving forward. So I would move approval of the Keno project and then restudy the other projects behind it.
Is there a second to that?
Second.
Okay. Motion and second. Discussion. Tom, you have
a... I was just going to follow up on the other center off. You know, it may be that some of these yellow, the little yellow circles, Powell, Mesa, Junior, Poston, Fremont, end up being closed because of public health and safety reasons, mm-hmm. but if we have the regional pools that pick them up, then we're, and if you go to the next to last slide again, we've got 4.6, 4.6, and 6.2, so we've got $15 million allocated. We don't have the money, but we have $15 million allocated to Mesa, Powell, and Poston. If that gets moved into the regional pools to the east side, that may be the way to go. I think if you do that, you need to do roads, because otherwise you miss the whole southwest part of the city. But
sure.
Mike's motion today is limited to just moving forward with Keno.
Okay, so not roads.
I'm going to withdraw my second because I think we need to do both of them, so I'm going to withdraw my second.
I thought we were going to study a little bit as to what the costs were on roads to, and in the usage. You were going to see some figures to determine what the past usage was. And that's why I didn't include roads. If you're comfortable with roads.
I'm comfortable with roads because I think it's going to, it looks like, all I wanted to do really was to compare Carson back maybe 3 or 4 years with roads back 3 or 4 years, because, I mean, look what happened to Carson. It was at 8, mm-hmm. and then it went to
45.
If we can sort of expect the same thing at roads, if those numbers are similar, then I feel comfortable with roads.
If that's the case, I'll withdraw and restate and add roads.
Okay. No, second.
Okay. All right, move forward with Keno and roads is the motion and second. Discussion on it?
Mayor?
Yes.
Just a point of clarification. Is that roads without the amenity?
With
or without?
That's the only way we would do it, yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't do it without amenities, okay. Because you're going to end up with the same
with.
Five.
Okay.
People.
With.
All right. Was there a discussion on the type of amenity? Did you need clarification on that today?
We do, and as I mentioned, we're in 30% design now, and we have them on hold waiting for what amenity to put in as they start to plumb that facility and work on the final configuration.
I think at this point, can we make the motion here? Can we vote on this motion and then discuss the amenities? Because once you start discussing the amenities, I think I have a potential conflict. Because depending on what you decide, you could then be in competition with the Gulfland Sunsplash folks, which then I think puts me in a place of so I think that the cleanest way to do it.
Why don't we take the motion for Keno and Rhodes with an amenity package. We won't talk about what it is. Vote on it. And then we can go into more detail. Does that work?
Is that okay?
Sure. It's all right with
okay.
me.
Thank you.
All right. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Passes unanimously. Now let's talk about the amenity package.
Mayor, I guess, I'm sorry, Councilmember Rawls. If we're going to talk about amenities, we probably need to come back with a better presentation to show you in action really what are these different amenities so you know what they are so you're better attuned to it.
And what each one cost.
Yeah, okay. Well, right. We're not ready to talk about that today.
But, I mean, I'll just tell you that from my standpoint, if you're going to have a community pool that's going to have a regional rec, the splash pad for the kids that are 3 and under is absolutely essential. Mm-hmm. Now, whether you do a double slide in the area that's on this footprint or a flow river or whatever, we can talk about that. But the splash pad, I think, is essential.
Okay. Second. Oh, that was the motion.
I was kind of intrigued by the flow rider, like fun. So, all right. Okay, then we'll look for that to return at a later date.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you. Yeah. Peer reports on meetings and our conferences attended. I do need to, before we get into that in any detail, excuse Councilmember Jones, I believe he's at an NLC conference. And also, we are one council member short. Council member Griswold has resigned and announced that he is going to be running for mayor. So we've accepted his resignation yesterday. When we do, and I'll go a little ahead here out of order, scheduling of meetings and general information, I would like to put on for Monday's study session before our council meeting a discussion of the procedures that this council would like to go through to select a replacement, an interim replacement for his seat that has been vacant from his resignation. All right.
I concur, Mayor, and also, the sooner we get something out to the community, I've received several phone calls from people asking what the policy is going to be. I'm sure mm-hmm. other members have also, and the quicker we can get that out, the better.
Well, let's have that discussion Monday, and we'll come up with a policy on doing that. We do have a city attorney's opinion, District 5. They have to be obviously living in that district and for a two-year period of time. So there's a residency requirement, too. I'm not sure when the two-year clock is. Is that that would probably be the date that they are appointed? So depending on when that is.
I guess it says taking office.
In taking office? Okay. So if they're a week short, they might make it. From the, I mean, it could be. Hopefully we won't get quite that close on any of the candidates, but we will talk about that on Monday. Let's go back to hear reports on meetings and our conferences attended. Anyone have some updates, Scott?
If there is anybody on the council thinking of going to Chandler, Scottsdale to go to the Cheesecake Factory, that's no longer required. We have one in my district. I don't have a pool, but I got a Cheesecake Factory. I'll take it. Had the pleasure of opening that here just this past week. It's at Superstition Springs Mall. If you want to go there, it's over by the bookstore. You can't miss it. Huge building. Oh, and I got to say this. One of the speeches they gave at this thing, they told me, and I'm pointing to your office, from the day they took out the first permit to dump, working with the city, 88 days from start to finish, the whole building was done. Absolutely phenomenal work. There's no way they could do that without the help of the city and all the departments going through making those inspections and getting that. They were, and this was a regional manager, absolutely impressed with how well that process worked in Mesa. So I had to let you know about that. It was over at Parkwood Ranch HOA board meeting. Had a lot of the city folks over there. Any other HOAs want to have us come over and talk to them about any issue? Be glad to do that. Very good meeting, a lot of good questions all around. And then I was also at the RPTA board meeting, Mayor, and really nothing overly exciting happened there. So, but okay. I was there.
All right. Vice Mayor.
Thank you. I'm just going to report on one instead of going through a list, although I do want to inquire as to whether or not there was cheesecake handed out to staff members over in your department. I guess that wouldn't be ethical, would it? I went to the part of the Top Off 4 seminar that was hosted by the Arizona Division of Emergency Management. We are participating as a state along with Oregon and Guam in a top off exercise, which has to do with a hazardous event that is designed for the local systems to fail. I want everybody to understand how this is designed. They have made it so that the local area can't take care of itself. So it has to go to the region, and it's designed for the region, the regional system, for the event to be so major that the regional system fails, and for the event to be so major that the state system fails, so that it has to go up to the federal level. Now, that's a little stressful for our folks because they are used to taking care of everything, and they don't want to fail. But if the exercise would actually be a failure if we didn't have to go to the regional, state, and federal level, because they are trying to model what happens now, and this is in the post-Katrina world, whether or not they have their ducks in a row at the federal level to be able to come in and do assistance on this. And so Gil Damiani and others from our emergency management have been working on this for months, years. I don't know. Gil said he eats, lives, breathes, sleeps it. His family hears it at the dinner table. So they're all prepared. But I don't think the average citizen will be aware of what's going on. But it will be an exercise that is taking place here in Oregon and in Guam and will make its way all the way back to the cabinet in Washington, D.C. Thank you.
Okay. Mark?
Just for the Queens Park residents, I was invited to Queen Creek High School last week to speak about my experience as a Vietnam veteran. I just thought, since we didn't mention that night, that we do have some veterans on this council, and I was able to share my experience, strength, and hope with the students of Queen Creek High.
Okay. NAG Regional Council had a meeting last night. One point I'd like to bring out is there is a Hacienda framework study, which is 1,400 square miles on the west side. It's basically Buckeye and some of the surrounding communities. They have a land use transportation plan that's created in there. A price tag to build of about $22 billion. as in big bucks. If it builds out to the population that they expect 1 million people by 2030 in that area. They expect 3 million people in that area alone at build out. And to give you an idea, the I-10 freeway is the biggest bottleneck, accommodates about 300,000 vehicles a day. This would this area with that type of population would generate 1.7 million trips. So you have some transportation issues that are not solvable with existing freeway capacity issues. So something else is going to, some quantum leap has to be made in getting people around. That is one study of several, and I have, this is the different Mojave, Coconino, Navajo, Mangyan Rim. There are different councils of government throughout the state, and there is a movement taking place that is called Building a Quality Arizona, which is looking at the potential of doing a statewide ballot issue sometime in the future to do transportation funding that would not just, Maricopa County did its half cent for 20 years. This would be a statewide financial contribution of some method, and also probably some privatization, toll roads and other things that would be looked at for how do you build a interconnecting system of transportation for the state. So when we go from 5 million people to 25 million people in Arizona, we don't have gridlock throughout the entire state, and we still have a quality environment. So you'll hear more about that, I'm sure, in the next year to 2 years. There's some talk on this one about trying to do it in an 08 time frame on a ballot in November of 08. I don't think they're going to have their studies done enough detail to know what would be on the ballot. But that is being pushed by at least one group to move it forward very quickly. 09 is kind of a special election, and 010 you get into a lot of other politics with senator races and governors and all kinds of things. So I just wanted to give you a little update. This study that they did out at the Hacienda Valley area is really cutting edge. There is not funding, but they've talked to at 140-150 meetings with property owners. They have some type of a framework that will take them to build out. So it's very impressive. Instead of just building subdivisions and worrying about it later, they're actually being proactive on it. And I thought it was an excellent framework study that MAG worked with the Hacienda Valley area. So,
may I ask you a question? Was there any conversation about, you know, you've talked about having a requirement for 100-year transportation, kind of like the 100-year water supply requirement. When you look at that, was there any talk about attaching something that would force the developers of the land to help pay for the...
It came about through some comments that actually that I made when they were talking about their freeway placement for on and off ramps. Then you get into the adequate public facilities and you don't degrade the existing level of service. So every 2 miles, they've kind of tried to identify where the freeway ramps would be. And my comment was, I don't want to see more people come in and just build an exit ramp and then dump all the traffic on I-10. And you have the same problem with Goodyear and Avondale and everyone else saying, you know, now we have to widen it because downstream or upstream, they changed the capacity. So what you try to do is several things, is figure out what additional capacity you need if you're going to do it. Also figure out if you can do some local employment so you have a you don't have quite a better job dispersion through the area. So they're starting to look at that, and that ties in, I think, a little bit with the state trust land that let's do water, let's do land use, let's do transportation, let's do all of those concurrently. So that we don't build one and then have another problem that develops. So it's coming, but it's coming very slow. Yeah. Mike?
Just another question. It appears that they need something minimum 60 size or larger on the 10. Do they have the right of way to expand the 10 that far?
I'm not sure. I believe there's quite a bit of right of way. They're doing a study right now that also looks at a a high-capacity transit corridor through the middle of I-10 that goes all the way out. This study goes out to 457th Avenue. Yeah, I mean, that's like way out there. Yeah, 457th Avenue, I couldn't believe it. But they are looking at the constraints for that. But the I-10 corridor that goes over to L.A. actually had a transit set-aside corridor in the middle. So they're trying to see if they want to use that or not, and that will then have some, you know, either park-and-ride lots or something else if they're going to do it. But that study is underway. Right. Any other reports or meetings? Okay. And next up is scheduling the meetings and general information. Mr. Brady.
Thank you, Mayor. Reminder, Monday we have both a study session and council meeting. We would, we're looking at starting at 4:30 on Monday. As Mayor mentioned, we have a few study session items, discussion of the council regarding a replacement for District 6, or 5, excuse me. And sorry.
I don't think Scott heard you.
Oh, good. We're fine then.
He's looking for
a go-go. Sorry. And then also we've invited Mr. Alfonso Pena from ICE to come back to council. There's an update on some information about working with Mesa PD on a variety of issues that he was wanted to bring him back to visit with the council. So that's on Monday. And then, of course, the following two Thursdays, the 4th and the 11th, we'll have our study sessions. Thank you.
Okay. Any questions?
Is this where I get to announce that I am not running for mayor?
Are there any requests to speak this morning?
No speakers, Mayor.
Okay, then the study session is adjourned. Thank you.